Welcome to the meeting of Sexaholics Anonymous. My name is Sean, and I'm a recovering sex addict. And hello, everybody. And to my left is Gary.
Good morning.
The name of this meeting is... I apologize. What is so bad about lusting? Please take a moment to silence all electronic devices. If you need to use yours during the meeting, please take it outside. I'd like to take a moment now of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In the spirit of the 12th tradition, to carry the message, this meeting is going to be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off for any reason. If you wish to share, please speak directly into the microphone so that the listener can follow you. If you wish not to be recorded, we invite you to participate by listening or attending other sessions. Please do not touch any of the recording equipment. This meeting focuses specifically on the 12 promises, which are found on pages 83 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I asked a volunteer ahead of the meeting to come to the mic and read all of the 12 promises.
Ben, sexaholic.
Hi, Ben.
The 12 promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to find, we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Two, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Three, we will comprehend the word serenity. Four, we will know peace. Five, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Six, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Seven, we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Eight, self-seeking will slip away. Nine, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. 10, fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. 11, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. 12, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The facilitators will share their experience, strength, and hope now on the topic for 5 to 7 minutes each. And then we're going to leave 25 to 30 minutes approximately for sharing and closing announcements. So at this time, I'm going to ask Gary to share first, and then I will take over. And we're sharing about the topic of what's so bad about lusting.
Good morning. My name is Gary, recovering sexaholic.
Hey, Gary.
I'm going to just share a wee bit about my story and then speak directly to the topic. So my sobriety is October 30th of 08, addicted to lust and fantasy. Really from age of discovery, it didn't matter what it was. I mean, we had catalogs back in my based on my age, didn't have the internet, but I continued the whole curve up with technology. First married for 24 plus years, I was acted single pretty much from the get-go, and that was extensive use of the sex trade in most of its forms, affairs, one-night stands, just no control over my eyes at all. Didn't care who I hurt, it was all about myself. I initiated a divorce, met my new partner, could not have asked for a better person. I disclosed everything to her before we were intimate, didn't have any secrets, and I didn't stop the fantasizing and masturbation. Gradually the habits came back, and very, very grateful for discovery and for the fellowship. So this, for me, this particular topic, I think, is the cornerstone of my addiction, got to speak in the eye. What's wrong with, with a little lusting? I think everything is wrong with it. That's what got me here. God created women for us, to be attractive to us, but it was how I twisted it and where it got to, and it just continued to progressively get worse and worse. Part of the, with our problem, very, very early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents and peers. I was a loner. I just, I kept it inside. My therapist said I was really good at living a double life, keeping a secret. And it certainly made true union with either of my wives, my current one, impossible. And I was losing my life. I was spiritually bankrupt when I came into the program. There was no two ways around it. I was about to lose everything, and I had everything I'd been blessed in life, and I was just totally throwing it away. One second here. So on page 35 of the white book under the addictive process, it's almost impossible to pinpoint exactly when, how, and why our practice became addictive. Eventually, the process takes on a life of its own, often unrelated to the initial causes. And unlike normal coping practices, our addictive thinking and behavior becomes excessive and repetitive and are forced to serve a whole lot of other functions they weren't meant to serve. And on page 41, the addiction is less to lust and not merely to the substance or physical act. Lust, the attitude itself, becomes the controlling factor in the addiction. So the four worst words for an addict are, because I can't, I can handle that. And I thought I could handle it. And the results were, quite clearly I was not able to. My second wife, who I mentioned that could not have had a better person, was previously married to an alcoholic. She understood the addictive process. And she said the one thing she thought she couldn't handle is if I ever cheated on her. And while emotionally I didn't, and I was getting closer to it, physically I did hundreds and hundreds of times. So it was between my ears. So what's wrong with lust? Everything. If I was an alcoholic and say, what's wrong with having a little drink or, going to a bar, going to a stag, just name it, where that stuff's around. So for me, it was getting rid of those things in my life, changing boundaries, doing whatever it was going to take to turn that ship around. So somebody used the example for me of an ocean liner, a huge ocean liner, a container ship. And you had to slow it down. It just doesn't slow down quickly. And then I had to turn it, and then I had to start to speed it up again. So it's taken 8.5 years for me. Do I still notice people, and et cetera, et cetera? Yes, I do. There's no two ways around that. It's what I do, taking that second look. It might be a millisecond, but if I start feeding it again, I'm running that risk. So, thank God for today, I can drive by a jogger on the street. I'm going to see that jogger. I can't avoid seeing the person in my peripheral vision, but I don't have to take it and tell you whether it's a redhead or it's wearing shorts or, whatever it is. So it's taken time, a lot of time for that to happen. In the initial years, my anxiety level over that when those things would happen, or I'd drive by a massage parlor, it was part of my my profile, I was drawn there, okay? But I don't have that anymore. Gradually it left, but it took time. And an example I would use, and this I put this in a letter to my wife when we're going through our recovery. I think of the addiction as a person. I want to starve that person. I want to choke them to death. I want to kill them. I don't think I can ever kill them. Just like a fire going out, there's always going to be an ember there. But if I lust, it's like me giving that fire fresh fuel or oxygen to keep it going. Okay, I need it to be dead, or as deadened as I can make it. There are a number of things that have helped me to do it. One is my morning check-in with a partner. So we talk most mornings. We have a number of things that we do say during it. In the last 24 hours, is there anything I've done or thought about I'm ashamed of or need to shed light on? So if there is, if I took somebody in or saw something, we talk about it. It's out in the open. Is there anything in the next 24 hours that may give me difficulty? Well, if I'm going to be at a wedding, so there's going to be formal attire, I need to know, hey, I got to have my boundaries up and control of my eyes. Okay, because if I do start just to take it in or check out a body part, I'm asking for problems. One of the slogans I like the best is, no matter how long I'm on this road, I'm the same distance from the ditch. So I'm gonna be on the road, but I want to walk that center line and not start to stray, because the further I get over here, I'm vulnerable. Things that I did when it first happened, my wife and I used to watch porn together. Like, you know, that was really healthy for us, right? Well, it might have been okay for her, but it wasn't good for me. So we changed our TV channels, the programs we watch. By going to a restaurant, if I'm thinking about it, if I'm aware, and by the way, awareness is my number one word in this program. I'm aware of who I am. Previously, I might be able to say I was a victim. I don't think that was ever the case, but if I look at it that way, if I choose to go out and act out today or start lusting, I'm a volunteer. I'm actively engaging in that. I have a choice to make. I choose not to do that. And it required a change of heart. My anything I would say really didn't carry any weight with my wife at that point. Okay, I had to show her. I had to change my actions, and she could see that daily. One of the things we've did, and I've shared this before, done 2 lie detector tests. She can ask for lie detector tests at any point in time she wants. Okay, and boy, is it freeing not having secrets and being able to do that. I've got 3 girls. I can think of them. If I'm looking at somebody else, okay, of the same age, it could be somebody else's wife, somebody else's daughter, and so they're a person. They're not an object. It took quite a while, but that's something I use all the time. Another thing has helped me, my medallion, it's right there. I can reach up and grab it at any point in time, and you know, where it did say, remember when it's worn off, but I know what it said there. I can't turn this thing off. I was sharing earlier, I was up in the bush fishing earlier this year, and the only thing that worked was a satellite phone. There was nothing triggering up there. I'm out in the middle of the lake, and for about 5 minutes, this thing started going offside. And I feel like, where in the world did it come from? So it doesn't go away, okay, but I say serenity prayers, I say the third step prayer, and gradually that part's gone. Stop. I may be repeating myself here. You know, another slogan is, will I practice great mental hygiene in all I do and think about today? So starting my day with that. Okay. So, you know, what's so bad about it? Everything is. You know, if I want to stay the same, that's fine. But if I'm an alcoholic, I'm taking myself into bars or I'm at a stag or anything like that, it's the same thing with lust for me. I need to have it not around me. There's a lesser chance. If I'm feeding it, if a TV program... We're watching one the other night. We got a big 60-inch TV, and the party, you know, there was a wee bit of a body part showing on the screen. I focused on their eyes. First time I've done that, by the way. I just tried to look at the person's eyes on the TV, and I did not see the rest of the body. If it had been a bad show, we got to exit that. I also wrote out how damaging it would be if I continued down this road. So writing it down for me... made it very real. Okay, if I kept doing this, what's going to happen with my wife, with finances, with my children, with my business, all those damages? That was very sobering for me, and I've reread that many times. So with that, I'd just like to close with a quote from Roy Kay. Just give me 1 second here. One of the last times Roy Kay spoke, he said, "I am not lust-free, but I am free not to lust." I knew what he meant. The steps, traditions, and concepts of service are what will help me to be free not to lust one day at a time. Thank you.
Sean, recovering sex addict. Or sexaholic. I was thinking about the topic, and I was coming back to the same problem that I have with it. And if I had more time, I'd probably elaborate on a multitude of problems. But the one I wanted to share about was the fact that I become a taker and I cannot receive or give. It begins very, very early in my story when I am born with a congenital heart defect, and I end up growing up for the first year, a good chunk of my first year of life, in a hospital. And in that hospital, because my parents didn't have any resources, it was a teaching hospital. And in the teaching hospital, people could come at any time of the day to run tests, to learn about the really sick kid. And what that ended up setting up for me, I believe, is that I cannot protect my body. It is not special or sacred, and anyone can violate it if they want to. And I have no recourse. I believe that's my takeaway, because if you spent time with me from about the ages of 4 to last week, not quite that long, I was absolutely enraged often. I would be picking fights. I would be getting enraged at the way my peer group was mistreating me, and I had no ability to control it. But I liked how it felt. And all of that was going to be in my life before I started becoming aroused by anything in a sexual way. My very first most powerful mood-altering drug was going to be rage. And in that, I thought I would have the capacity to stop you from taking and for me to be able to have my turn at taking something back. Fast forward some into my addiction, or the development of it, and I'm going to end up starting out dating girls who, in a reenactment of my own trauma storyline, be emotionally abused by them. I couldn't say no. I would feel emotionally mistreated by them. I would feel impotent. By the time my addiction was at its peak, I was going to be doing the taking. I would date women who were, well, dating is too strong a word. I would be hooking up with women that were much less emotionally secure than I, which wasn't saying much. I wasn't doing so well myself, but weren't very emotionally secure, so that I could be the one in charge. And that felt exhilarating. Fast forward a little bit more, and wedding day, I am getting married, and we had been sexual already, and on the night of, and I was totally able to do that. I was totally able to do that because I was lusting. The day of the marriage, the night of the marriage, rather, I was literally shaking and was not able to be sexual. I was going to come to find out that I was a double winner. I am both a sex addict and sexual anorexic, and was like, well, that's great news. the cost that came with, and the shame that came with, I can't figure out how to be sexual with the person that I am claiming and truly think that I love, but I could be sexual if I don't know your name, was maddening. But it was teaching me some. And I had already gotten into the rooms about a year, I think. And it was teaching me something new. What it was teaching me was my arousal template, the things that I did when in active addiction were being driven almost exclusively by my trauma story. Almost exclusively. And so every time I acted out, I was getting less and less capable of receiving and giving. It was crippling me. I end up going to real work through the steps and going through a book many might know called Facing the Shadows with my spouse. That was terrifying and awesome. Going through that with her together, and then another book, Sexual Anorexia, and starting to learn about every time I do the bobblehead thing on the turnpike, a main road in New Jersey, every time I did anything like that or anything at the other end of my acting out extreme, I was taking and feeding my inability to receive. When I set a much stronger abstinence definition for myself, in which I wasn't going to pursue lust in any form, what started happening to me was I got access in my fourth step, in a way I'd never gotten access before, to all the boogeymen I would not have wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole previously. And as that journey began, I was then going to be able to be intimate with my wife with no lust present. Today, I can do things like chair a meeting because I want to share and not expect that you need to give me something in return. I can do it and feel all the vulnerability that comes with me sharing who it is I am and what I believe I have to offer without thinking you're going to somehow violate me. I think it is the byproduct of both being now 14 years sober and all of the work that I had put in to going back to the beginning of my story. That work is terrifying. And any of you sitting in the room, I'm sure, knows exactly what I'm talking about. I grew up, and I was telling Gary, I just met him about an hour and a half ago, and I was telling him that I used to play going to an AA meeting in my backyard with my brother, because, you know, that's what every kid does, right? my parents were in recovery since before I was born, and I'd been taken to all kinds of meetings. And so you emulate what's happening to you in real life. I guess that's better than emulating beatings. And playing, going to a meeting in the backyard, and one of the things I heard over and over and over and over again that I would say to myself on the swing set was, alcohol is our solution, not our problem. And that's true for me. The lust was going to be the solution to my trauma. It's not a great solution. It's quite inefficient and ineffectual. But it was my solution. And when I gave it up, I was going to discover all of that pain that was just waiting for me to go after, address, and get some real healing around. I can let people love me today. When I first got into a meeting, and I'll stop with this, I couldn't. It wasn't like I didn't like it. I couldn't hug a guy. I would start shaking. Now I can do it and feel the warmth and not think I'm going to get overpowered. I can have really fond, non-sexual moments with my wife and thoroughly enjoy it. I can be the person that I believe today that God wants me to be and be of service to God and my fellows and let them be of service to me. Thanks for letting me share. Give me just a second as I find what I misplaced. I am now asked to read what the guidelines are for the remainder part of the meeting. Here are the guidelines for sharing after the meeting. If you would like to share, please come up ahead of your turn and make a line by sitting in the assigned chairs up front. When it is your turn to share, please speak clearly so that everyone can hear you. In participation, we avoid topics that can lead to dissension or distraction. We also avoid explicit sexual descriptions and sexually abusive language. The emphasis is on honesty, recovery, and healing. How to apply the 12 steps and 12 traditions in our daily lives. No crosstalk, please. If someone feels another is getting inappropriately explicit or is focusing excessively on the problem rather than on the solution, they may so signify by quietly raising their hands. Although this is an anonymous meeting, please remember that anonymity does not mean legal confidentiality. The state of New Jersey has specific regulations that mandate specific behaviors to be reported. Please be mindful of what you share, not to break your own or another member's anonymity. At this time, we are going to ask people to come up, whoever wants to share. We've got three chairs in the queue. Who would like to share? Am I missing something?
No. We're going to try and do, well, I will time this, try and keep it about 2 minutes. That should give 9-10 people enough time to share.
Hi, my name's Dave, sexaholic from San Antonio, sober since October 14, 2012. I was hopelessly addicted to lust before I came to SA. And I say hopelessly because, you know, for me, I didn't know it was lust. When I came to my first SA meeting, I was desperate. I was hopeless. I'd tried everything you could possibly think of, and I'm sure you all tried it. Therapy. You know, I tried to pray this away. I went to church every day for 4 years in a row. I still remember the day before I came to my first meeting. I was so obsessive with, you know, thinking about sex. You know, surfing the internet on my little pad in the living room with my kids and my wife there, and then going into the bathroom to masturbate, and then come back out and doing it again. And you know, for me, this disease, when I did my first step, I realized that the two suicide attempts that I tried earlier in my life were because of this disease. That was one of the epiphanies that I had. And I was hopeless because, you know, I thought marriage would cure this, praying, therapy. I tried all those. I even tried other S programs. Nothing worked until I walked into my very first SA meeting and I heard this message of lust. And when I heard that, it was like the alcoholic realizing that, you know, I'm holding the bottle in my hand. And only this bottle was in my mind. And I got a sponsor out of that first meeting. Because I'd never had a sponsor before, and I was just, you know, I was at my rope's end. I realized that if something didn't happen, if this wasn't going to work for me, this was my last hope. If this wasn't going to work for me, it was going to end in death again for me. I just knew it. You know, I was about to do something even worse than I'd ever done before, or I was going to try to kill myself again. And so for me, lust. You know, lusting is more than, my ego feeds my lust. And when my lust kicks in, I act out in many different ways. I'll lie, I'll cheat, I'll steal, I'll tell you what you want to hear, I'll people please. It doesn't matter. Lust is just more than just, for me, has just been more than just something sexual. And that's why I have learned through this program I have to give up lust in every aspect of my life. That I can't lust after anything. I have also learned that I am in control of nothing. I am powerless over everything, and so therefore I have to surrender it all. And so this message of lust, Roy's message of lust, saved my life. I walked out of that first meeting, knew, finally, I realized at that first meeting that this was the answer. I just knew it. It's like I could wrap my arms around lust and realize that this is what I have to fight. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Shim, and I'm a sexaholic. Thank you guys for the lead and the topic. It's amazing that I acted out for 20 years and couldn't come up on my own that it was the lust that was whipping my rear end. And it's amazing because that was one of the things that made perfect sense to me the first time I heard it. It was like, duh. If I'm watching pornography for 7 hours and maybe I masturbated twice or three times during those 7 hours, the total accumulated time of masturbation was like a total of 60 to 120 seconds. You know, the lusting time was hours and hours and hours. And if I, you know, and when I was younger and grew up in a home, we didn't have television. The magazines we had were like U.S. News and World Report, which was good for me. But I knew which neighbors were subscribed to which magazines, so that I can go out on recycling the night before recycling morning and find exactly what I knew everybody was. The hours that I spent figuring all that out was a lot more time than the time I actually spent reading any of that stuff. So the pursuit, you know, and this went on from the age of 8 to 28. That's a lot of years. And I needed to come to a meeting and hear someone read out a book, you know, that it, that lust is the driving force behind my sexual acting out. And like, when I look at the first step and I realize that I am powerless over lust and the act of having sex is not my addiction, the act of lusting is my addiction, and sex is just part of that, part of how that comes out, there's a freedom for me that comes because, you know, I was referred back to the big book in the white book before the steps and how it works, not how it works in the big book, but how it works in the white book. He says, read the big book, read the 12 and 12, and then come back and do these steps in the white book. And in the big book I read, over any considerable amount of time, my addiction always gets worse and never gets better. And I realized early on when I was given this message, which I no longer subscribe to, which is, if you're a sex addict, you will always lust, which I bought into, which today, not only don't I believe it, but in my experience, I have found it not to be true. Thank God for Jesse's newcomer CD, where he talks about not having lusted in over 11 years on that CD, and someone finally gave me the message that it was possible, and I've been able to go extended periods of months and even years without, like Sean was saying, pursuing lust in some action, and being able to recognize that if I am buying into I will lust, over any considerable amount of time, it will always get worse, never get better, even if I'm maintaining technical sobriety of not masturbating, you know? But my brain is still not here. I'm still not connected with people. I'm still all over the place. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Good morning. My name's Andrew, sexaholic.
Hi, Andrew.
And I'm grateful for the speakers and the shares about the not fairs in my life, that, you know, this isn't fair, therefore I'm entitled to lust. You know, hey, God, why did you, you know, let this happen to me? Okay, sorry. So, again, the not fairs being an excuse to lust. And my problem is something I call edging. And again, edging means other things to other people. But yeah, for me, edging is, okay, how much lust can I get away with? How much looking can I get away with? How much surfing the internet for health news, celebrity news, you know, what's going on Facebook? I mean, that's what I'm tempted to do. And I am working on giving up edging. I mean, I have not fully given up edging, you know, sober from pornography and masturbation now, but that's a new frontier, and not a new frontier. That's something I need to work on, and I'm grateful for the share that even if I'm technically sober, lust will progress and get worse, and you know, eventually, like gravity, lead me back to a relapse. I certainly can work harder at this program. I've been working very hard at my job over the past year and a half. I mean, I studied 900 hours for work exams to get out of a tough situation at work, and, you know, it came out actually really well. So, I mean, if I can put that much focus into my job, I can put that much focus into recovery. Anyway, I'll shut up and realize that I can't even do lusting and get away with it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi there, I'm Mike J. I am a sexaholic. I am a lustaholic. What I want to say is that, what I hope the Spirit wants me to say is that I'm sober sexually 17 years. That's what you call technical sobriety, yes? Okay. 17 years of technical sobriety. I'm really thankful for the fellowship and for my higher power that has helped me to be that way. During those 17 years, I've come to understand a little about lust. What's so wrong about lust? What's so bad about lust? Well, if I read Roy's definition, it's like an inordinate desire. It's inordinate to begin with. That's what's wrong. And then I'll put that concretely by saying lust is between the ears, I think they said. I liked what I heard up here. Roy said, I am free of lust, but I am not free of lust. I am not free of lust. I am free not to lust. Beautiful words, and I've experienced that. That's it? Oh, that's very small. You want to read it?
I'm not lust free, but I am free not to lust.
I am not lust free, but I am free not to lust. Yes, that's so beautiful and so true. As I say, for me, lust is between the little that I know about lust is between the ears. I can be listening to the radio. I can see something in the newspaper or whatever it is, and here I am not accepting what's out there. I am creating my own reality, not what is out there, not what I hear on the radio. Just a little thing. A DJ on the radio playing music, oh, she has a beautiful voice. Maybe I'll call her up. It's a call-in, and I'll ask her to go out for lunch today. You know, and this thought will come throughout the day. This is crazy. I'm crazy. I'm a lustaholic. And I pray every morning, please give me the desire to stop lusting. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm a sexaholic. It's good to be here. I've been sexually sober since November 4th of 2014. I'm nervous and anxious. I've been to many conventions. I've been in the program about 10 years. I've never gotten up and shared at a meeting. And that's part of my problem. It's all about me, right? You know, it has to be perfect, and my image is what's so important. And so I got up here because I didn't want to. And my drug of choice was internet pornography. And through the 10 years of being in the program, it's been a really, really slow process of letting go of that. That was sort of the last thing to go for me. I was able to give up masturbation years ago, but I would look at porn without masturbating, which is really insanity. But I was grateful that someone pointed out earlier about awareness, because I didn't really understand what I was doing when I was lusting. I was really slow to see what lust was for me, and so the awareness piece was crucial. And I do a daily sobriety renewal, which has helped me tremendously, because it keeps me from hiding and keeping secrets. And one of the questions is, you know, is there anything coming up in the next 24 hours that would threaten your recovery? And I used to focus on the externals, you know, like, well, I'm traveling today, so I'll be in the airport, et cetera, et cetera. And I have realized that over time I have focused more on the internals. And, you know, what is my attitude today? And I realize that a really important question for me every day is, am I willing to live without lust today? I have to be very honest about the answer, because some days I really want it. You know, I don't want to live without it. I don't want to have to live without it, because it's been, you know, my solution for so long. And so I remember Roy Kay once saying that the prior attitude when the temptation comes is what's critical and crucial. And so I'm learning that the externals I can't change, obviously, but the internals I can through surrender and that's really helping me a lot. So thanks for letting me share.
Hello, my name is Ilya. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Ilya.
When I heard this topic, I was like, yeah, you know, I really want to know, you know, what's so bad about lusting? I was like, yeah, you know, I really want to hear it. And I'm really glad the message I heard is very simple. It's exactly like what's wrong with alcohol for the alcoholic. It's everything's wrong about it. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My relatives are alcoholic. A lot of people that I know, my family are alcoholic. So I see so clearly what's wrong with alcohol, the damage it causes and the fights and all that. And it's the same thing with lust for me. You know, it's the same thing. And that's what's wrong about it. You know, just like I know that an alcoholic can't take even a little bit of a drink, I can't take a little bit of lust too. And I really like the message I heard that lust is in, you know, it's definitely out there in all these different places I can go and do. And it's also in my head, you know, it's also in my head. Like, I really can relate to the story of, like, being middle of nowhere and nothing's around. And then it's just, I could be lusting over here. And I could also relate to, like, being aware. Not aware, you know, that's my weakness. That's something I'm trying to do is being aware of what I'm feeling, because that's a big trigger for me. A lot of my, you know, falling back into that addiction is like my emotional sobriety and being aware of what I'm doing, what's on my mind and where I'm going and like things like that. And so I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful to shares. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
These two speakers, and we're out of time. Hi, I'm Andre, a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hi, Andre.
I got a heart, it's beating. And, you know, I've been in SA since 1992. I'm a lustaholic, I'm a sexaholic, and I was addicted to my loved one, to my wife. I used her for 19 years before I went to SA as a sex object. I got married, I was a sexaholic, I used her on the night of the marriage. She wanted to sleep, I wanted sex. She passed away last year, and we talked about what's so wrong about lust. Lust kills love. And in her sharing in SNN, what she used to say, the marvelous thing between us and the most painful thing that there is love between us. And lust wanted to destroy, to kill that love we had for one another. It didn't, because we stayed married for 43 years before she passed away last year. And now she's gone. I'm a widow. I could get a relationship. Lust would like that. My sponsor said, let go and let God. He'll tell you when it's time. So what's so wrong about lust? It's only in my mind. And if I let God handle it, I can live. I'm a happy and joyous and free sexaholic. But lust wants to destroy that too. So every day, I went to New York for the last 2 days. I had to surrender most of the days, because I'm a lustaholic. What's so wrong about lust? It wants to destroy my mind. So I'm here today, and she's not. She used to come to some of the convention, and I can just thank her for being in my life, because that's her that's what I was going on, that I was using her as a sex object. Now I'm really grateful to be a sexaholic and to recover from lust, because lust was killing love, and it was killing me, and it was killing the relationship also. So thank you, everyone.
Hi, my name is Brad. I'm a sexaholic.
Brad.
I'm only sober since Sunday. I have to bring that to the light right away. I've been in the program for about 8 years, and I can really identify with the shares and how lust is very destructive. I've had about a year and 4 months of sobriety at one point. I find that the chronic relapsing is, for the most part, I think, I work a pretty hard program and essay, but I think I still tend to put my work for money and for other things before my desire to recover. And that's what I have to realize, and also that I'm a very self-willed person, and I think listening to my small voice in my heart is really important for me to stay sober, to help my higher power guide me through the day. And often I will ignore that voice, and that's where I run into trouble. It might not be a less related thing, but it could lead that always doing not my higher power's will, but my own will, and thinking I know what's best usually leads me down the wrong road. So I'm grateful I'm here, sometimes it doesn't make sense, that voice, that small voice, but I'm starting to learn to trust it more and more. Thank you for your shares.
Thank you, everyone, for your shares. In closing, anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. Remember that we never identify ourselves publicly with SA in the press, radio, TV, or films. Neither does anyone speak for SA. This is an anonymous program. Please keep the name, addresses, phone numbers of anyone you meet or learn about in SA to yourself. The shares we have heard here were told in confidence. Please do not repeat what you have heard about another member to anyone who is not actually here at this meeting at the time that it was shared. Please, what you say here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Here.
I'd like to close us out with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mine be done. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Same to you.
So they're asking us, I'm just looking at the...
I'd like that.
Oh, most welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's good to meet you.
Right.
Are you in this one time?